The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And with the collapse of the former superpower,
several powerful factions now vying for control.
The threat is real. An evil organization calling itself SCAR.
Known only as SCAR.
Their goal?
Nothing short of total world domination.
Led by this man.
Known only as Iron Claw.
We will be victorious!
Not on my watch!
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show. We are, knowing is half the podcast, talking about G.I. Joe Extreme from the mid-90s. This is episode 5 of G.I. Joe Extreme, To Catch a Claw, and we're going to catch him together. My name is Ray Stecanus.
I'm Robert Clark Chan.
I'm Gina Ippolito.
I like how I said that as if this is like a mystery.
Everything in the universe is a mystery, Ray.
Life is a mystery. True. Everyone is standing tall. I hear you
life
call my name.
Life is a mystery.
It feels like home.
I wanna ride it all night long.
What? Oh, what?
That's what you're talking about.
Fucking highway.
Right?
Jesus,
no, it's
Gina.
A mystery. Life is a mystery.
Oof.
You know, weirdly enough, I side with Gina on this. I'm not sure how, but I do.
Don't make me go to a Rap Genius and look at the lyrics, man. I will. Because I already know that I screwed up the Madonna lyrics, so. Anyway,
who are you people?
We just did that. We actually did it on time, guys, like when we were supposed
mirth aside, it was like 108 degrees out here in Los Angeles
true.
Today.
Oh,
so my head is fried and melted.
God.
Yeah, I'm in a garage setting.
Oh, I was going to say, who cares if it's 108 degrees outside?
Gina, right. We don't all keep our houses at a cool 66 degrees.
No one is outside, though. Just turn your damn air conditioner on.
My partner needs the AC on way more than I do.
Oh man.
So they feel bad when they come down and like, hey, is it okay if I turn it off? I'm like, man, I'm out here with like hard nipples. Like,
oh,
I'm fine.
You rule the roost with an iron fist is what I'm taking away from that. Because if I ever had to ask someone if it was okay if I turned my own AC on, that's when I shoot them in the head in their sleep.
Mine does not have anything. In fact, they prefer a walking sauna 24/7. I don't know.
Ooh. That is also terrible.
But here's the deal. What is the max do you keep the AC? This is a question I'd be asking a lot of people, and I'll see how crazy my house is.
I don't care if it's winter. I don't care if it's summer. I want my house at 72 degrees at all time. I can go
72.
I can go colder. I can't really go hotter. I can go as low as like 68, but I'm not going any warmer than 72. I will boil alive.
Okay. And Chan?
I was raised without AC. So what happens in our house is it's 74 degrees at night. It's 78 degrees during the day.
Ugh.
And then they turned it off today and I was just sitting here and they came out a little bit later and just checking the temperature. Apparently it was still cool upstairs. Downstairs, I was sweating, didn't even realize it, which is usually what happens is I just don't notice. So
the frog in the boiling water.
Yes. Yes. I am a frog.
I will say my household is 78 degrees all the time.
Boom.
Doesn't stop.
70. That's terrible.
No, that's fine.
78.
Here's the thing. If I was a judge and someone put that as a reason for divorce, I would give them whatever they wanted. I would nullify prenups. I would give them sole custody of the children. If someone said, I'm getting a divorce because my spouse keeps 78 degrees in the house, I would say, yeah, that's case closed. You win everything.
No. You both live in a part of town that is like 15, 20 degrees sometimes hotter than other
correct.
Places in Los Angeles.
That is
so
correct.
You gotta keep that AC on. And 78 is like you get any colder, you're going to shut down the power station.
Nah.
We bought a generator for that. We're fine. You know, shut it down. Actually, we just today got in a portable air conditioner for my garage setup.
Oh.
Because we understand that living here in beautiful Panorama City.
Oh, wow.
During the summertime, where it got up last year to like 126. And that's when our power went out around Labor Day for 3 days of 120 plus degree weather. And that's when we bought the generator. And now, as a little precursor, we purchased this portable air conditioner, one room air conditioner from Black & Decker.
Ooh.
Arriving today. I have not set it up yet because I'm stupid.
Yeah, it's a good thing that you're not in a real hot garage trying to be funny, you know.
Trying. what's really changed, though, for that? Like, it's not like my performance has gotten any better or worse.
Fair point.
This is pretty much what you get, folks. But we're talking
with it.
Yeah, exactly. Hire me. Okay, so so this is episode 5 of G.I. Joe Extreme. It is called To Catch a Claw. And the live action is once again disappointing. I don't know if you guys feel the same way.
Yeah, it was. I feel like they lured us in with the first two episodes of G.I. Joe
Agreed.
Extreme by promising us campy live action crap. And these last two episodes, they've just been doing... like a little drone, a toy drone flying through the air.
A toy drone flying through the air with a VO over the top of it. In this case, Black Dragon and Ballistic. And they're just like, hey, follow me. Oh, you're the man. Yes, I am. Ha ha. Parachute out. And then we go right to the... It was like nothing there. This was like a nothing conversation. And I felt a little ripped off.
No. Yeah, what they should have done is... completed production on all of the episodes, then just spent like $200 to get like a couple of just like yoked a couple of muscly guys from Venice Beach.
Okay.
And drag them in, put wigs on them, have them stand around, and they don't even have to do much. They just like, you know, like wave their arms around and then put it over this. But like this thing that they're doing right now, it looks so cheap.
Well, here's the thing. You can see as the episodes go on that the budgets dipped, I guess, or they were running out of money because like they also repeat the PSA here at the very end. So this bookended by two very cheap things. At the beginning, it's live action, just sort of a toy flying through the air with voiceover over it. So they didn't have to really pay any on-camera actors. And at the end, they reuse, and I'm not talking like reuse it like they've been redoing the Deke era G.I. Joe. We're 5 episodes in. And this was like the one that they used for episode 2. They just use it again. So I think something's going on with their budget here.
Already hitting some rocky times.
It's going up someone's nose is what I think.
And we're on episode 5. How are they going to make it to 23?
It's going to be all clip shows like the end of Sunbow.
I was going to say it's going to end with 19 consecutive clip shows.
Well, I just confused Deke and Sunbow. The first reference I meant was Sunbow. The second reference I meant was Deke.
You just tie it all together. It's all the same thing at this point, right, Gina?
Yeah, I don't know what we're doing. I don't even know where I am right now.
That I believe.
You should probably turn your AC down a little.
Yeah, it's probably pretty obnoxious. It takes us to a mountain base. And, you know, we've seen many mountain bases in G.I. Joe before. In this particular case, this is real interesting to me because G.I. Joe is a battle strategy. I love it when G.I. Joe is a battle strategy because you have to analyze it. You have to say, like, would this work? How well thought out is this? How military precise is this? So what you basically have is a mountain base, which kind of looks like the old Terrordrome, right? It's a big kind of circular domed. It looks like the Pontiac Silverdome, like a closed football stadium, except it has like searchlights on the top. And so one of the Joes says, okay, we got to take out those searchlights. So in my head, you know, with very tactical, surgical precision, you get a sniper rifle with a silencer on it. You go poop, 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 and you kind of pop all the lights. So that way you're arriving in darkness and you have the element of surprise, you know, the reason to kill the lights.
Yep.
Instead, what they do is they shoot missiles at every single lighting fixture, blowing out the lights and putting the base on alert.
Yeah. This is my... The thing that really rankled me about Deke, and I would have thought that they would have gotten rid of it here, but it's still there. It's like there's no threat. Like, they can do all of these things. Immediately after this, Roadblock, like, you know, they like bust in the doors. Roadblock is hanging from the top of the like garage door frame with one arm shooting his 50 caliber machine gun.
Yes, he is.
Like, they're superheroes, but they're also like shitty dude bros about it, I guess. Like, Superman's not like, hey, fuck you, bro. I'm going to fucking punch you in the fucking face. And this is what I feel like all of the G.I. Joes are like.
Be straight up, though. Be cooler if he did.
I mean, that is kind of what Tobey Maguire is in that one where he turns into a dick and he's like finger gunning ladies in the street.
Yeah. Which I love, by the way. I won't hear anybody talking trash about it because it's a good bit.
It worked. They did it and it worked.
Hey, that bit was good. That movie exists.
I enjoyed it.
I don't know. I loves me some Sam Raimi, so it's real hard for me to get a bad word out of him.
I'll take it over X-Men 3 The Last Stand and the last Christopher Nolan Batman movie. I'll take it over both of those, also, but that's not exactly saying a lot.
Got a soft spot for Bane, so there you go.
Me too. That's why I don't like that movie. But anyway, they blow it all out. They start shooting up the base on the side, getting explosions, and kind of a cool thing, they shoot a bunch of smoke launchers at the base. Like, these smoke launchers must have been gigantic. They shoot them because the entire base gets engulfed in smoke, meaning it's going to be harder for the people inside to shoot at G.I. Joe as they approach. And I'm like, that mildly resembles an actual tactic. I'll take it.
There you go.
I'll take it because they know where the base is. It's not moving, but the base doesn't know where they are. I thought that was kind of cool. At which point now, and Chan, I didn't ask you to pull sound effects. I realized in this moment I had a few, so we're just going to go with it. But they start, all these big robots come out because G.I. Joe's got to kill a bunch of stuff that isn't people. And so the robots come out and start getting blown away. And there are some sound effects that I thought were like real, real weird for these high tech killer robots as G.I. Joe is blowing them out. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I do not.
Are you may be confused because one of the things that I have here is Metalhead's weapon, which is a gun.
Nope, that's a music gun that shoots vibration sounds.
It shoots guitar solos.
It does.
It shoots a guitar solo, which we hear over and over again.
The thing is that we'll listen to this whole thing in a sec, but what I thought was interesting was when the robot got blown out and destroyed, it just sounded like somebody rattling a paint can. Can you hear that like paint rattling sound in there? That was the literal sound of a robot exploding, and it was like...
You know, this was the first G.I. Joe where I realized that they have like icers so that they can shoot people and then just say, no, he's asleep, which, right. You know, it made me think like, oh, why haven't they been doing this the whole time? Because in Sunbow era, the original Sunbow era G.I. Joe, they just had like colored lasers and you just had to sort of believe that they never really hit them. But in this, like, you know, they're shooting people straight in the chest and then they're like, it's okay, he's sleepy.
Yeah, like point blank. And I was like, oh, did he kill him? And then like they cut back and the guy was like, oh, and he like got back up. I'm like, oh, wow, that was, I don't know how I feel about that.
I appreciate it. I want to see them shooting people and I know they can't shoot them and kill them because it's a kid's cartoon. So this is a nice compromise. That's not just, oh, why are they all such terrible shots? They can actually make them good shots, but since they're not cold-blooded murderers, they have icers.
I just mean it was more like a bait and switch. Like they shot them, the person fell as if they were shot, and then they're like, "Oh, it's okay, okay, fine."
It's like Duke's coma in the G.I. Joe movie. He's fine, everybody.
Say you have a stun gun before you pull that business.
Well, I think that they probably did. We just didn't see it. I think they've always in this iteration. I think they've always been icers.
No, I'm sorry. That sounds like some 1984 doublespeak. We've always had icers. That has always been the thing. I don't understand why you're having a problem with this.
There is historical from the original Sunbow era. There's the Funhouse episode where I vividly remember Bazooka gets hit by a laser blast and just gets knocked unconscious while he's like on the roller coaster mine car. and they have to like save him and stuff. So, I mean, like there is some precedent for people getting hit with the lasers in the show and just getting knocked out.
Well, like, they have, I mean, Star Trek had phasers on stun. It's not like it wasn't in the zeitgeist. People didn't understand like what's happening. Why is he asleep?
I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say that for the original series, they were likely told that they couldn't even do that.
No, that makes sense.
But then by the time, you know, by the time this one comes around.
By the time things got extreme.
Yeah, yeah. It's pretty extreme now. Well, it is extreme. But yeah, I'm gonna assume that in the original G.I. Joe, they said, no, you can never show a human shooting another human, even if it's with a stun gun. And by now they were like, yeah, all right, like S&P has changed. You know, the wall is down, Reagan's out, Clinton's in, the big news is about blowjobs, so it's time to get extreme.
That is pretty, I mean, that we were living in an extreme time back in the 90s, that's true. A fact.
Yeah.
I will say, yeah, it felt more like that I was just sort of taken aback that they would do that, just because we've seen so much of this content now that when it happened, I was like, So I don't know if I've just become soft. Yeah. I mean, I watched Harley Quinn.
I will say that this whole iteration, and maybe it's because Deke felt so childish.
Yeah.
This feels like the most adult version. It feels like when you start out and you're like 2 to 4 years old, you're watching Deke. And then maybe like 2 to 7, you're watching Deke. And then like 8 to 12, you're watching Sunbow, but then like 10 to 15, you're watching Extreme.
It's sort of like when you're watching the Ninja Turtles cartoon, and then you get into high school and you find out there's a Ninja Turtles comic that goes in some slightly different directions.
Much like, I agree with that.
Are you confusing comics with fanfic where the turtles fuck each other?
I'm definitely not, because that happened in the comics, Gina. Thank you. Look it up. The one part that
don't
I thought
look it
was
up,
like
Gina, don't look it up.
No, we've, done, we've been down this search. Road before. We have been down this road before. Let's
too
not.
Late. I looked it up. I think it's been a while since I posted anything to Ray's wall.
God damn it. Okay, so one very non-heroic thing that Black Dragon does, he walks up to one of the robots and says, "Don't shoot me.
Oh my god.
I surrender."
I surrender.
And then shouts not.
That is the most 90s thing that has ever happened in the history of time.
Guys.
Don't shoot. I surrender. A ninja flying over robots. Then turns out he's lying, shoots the robot, and then says, not. Oh, my God.
I love it.
Oh, my God.
Why do you hate fun?
I want to die. This makes me hurt.
Look, a couple of things to unpack here. One, it's not very noble to offer your surrender and then murder the person who puts their guard down. Not the most heroic thing on the planet, especially from, you know, maybe he's a ninja. I guess that's fine. But it's a G.I. Joe member. That's a little wonk. But on top of it, we've been talking for a couple of weeks now that we wanted some new games to play in the G.I. Joe Extreme show, because we used to do the Bechdel test, fuck, marry, kill. You guys remember, we did a whole lot of stuff if you've been with the show long enough. And you remember we did all this stuff, what's your favorite superpower?
Oh, yeah. Are we gonna play the I Want to Die game? That sounds like fun.
I wanted to see every single episode of G.I. Joe Extreme, if we can decide what the most 90s thing to happen in that episode is. And I was thinking it before this episode, and then this moment happened, and I said, this cements it. We have to pick the most 90s moment from the episode, whether it's at the end of the episode or as we're doing it, and we're all like, yes, that clearly is that moment. I think that we have to define the 90s through G.I. Joe Extreme. In this case, it's, I surrender, not...
I'm gonna say though that there's a whole, like, here's the thing. I get that this is very 90s, but also later there is a sort of slow motion fight scene with no noises except for like guitar solos.
Oh, we'll talk about that when we get to it.
So I'm just saying it's a toss up.
No, we will talk about that because thoughts. I have them.
I have notions. Yeah.
Your thoughts better be, this is damn fun. Just like when he said not earlier, because that was fun. And I don't know how you live in a world that's so devoid of joy.
Oh my God. I don't know how My thought is it's because you're living with your AC turned down to 55 and you are, in fact, the cold guy from that one Christmas movie. The Heat Mr. Miser. Freeze. What's the other dude?
Mr. Freeze.
Is his name Mr. Freeze?
No, Coldmeister.
Coldmeister?
Coldmeister.
Victor Von Freeze.
No, that's Heat Miser.
Yeah, Heat Miser and Coldmeister.
That He's can't a scientist. Be right. That sounds terrible.
Look, so we get inside the base, and we find out they're in there to find these jets. And it turns out that these...
Snowmiser. Wait.
These Snowmiser.
It's either Snowmiser or Coldmiser.
Nope, we're not, we'll never know. Just let it
Wait.
Go.
Wait. Yeah, it's Heat Miser and Coldmiser.
I mean, it makes sense.
Or Snowmiser.
Conflicting Snowmiser. It's Snowmiser.
But if you Google it, some say Coldmiser and some say Snowmiser.
Yeah, well, they clearly said one or the other on the television show.
I've Googled and come up with Stone Cold Drop Santa Claus with a Stunner on Raw. So well, I think that is right.
I think you won.
Is it Stone Cold Snowmiser?
You're talking about the most 90s thing we've seen. Stone Cold Stunning Santa could be actually the correct Ooh. Answer.
Wow, but that's frankly, real high up there.
It's real high up there. Okay, so they find these jets. They're like, we're here to get these jets. They go to shoot the jets. It turns out they're holograms. And you're to assume that's a giant plot point that will never be mentioned in this episode again.
I like it. Here's the thing. I liked this episode. I thought it was good.
I did too.
And like, this was a cool little bit of like trickery that I'm actually glad that they then like pivoted away from, because it helps build the world out versus just like, oh, the first thing we mentioned, that's what the show's going to be about. Like, sure. This is like, oh shit, we're in a trap. And then all of a sudden it takes like the episode itself takes a totally different turn, which I appreciate.
Which, look, yeah, you say
this
like,
may be what? An unpopular opinion, but I kind of like this episode too.
And
what? Yeah, I don't know how that works out, but there you go.
Pretty wild. Well, so they basically, this explains why all the stuff we didn't know. Why did they not attack G.I. Joe too hard when they were approaching?
Uh-huh.
Why were there only robots inside? And why did they face only token resistance once they got inside? The answer is, because once everybody got inside the dome, they like closed up the dome again with like magic second doors, and they had a countdown timer of like 30 seconds to blow out the dome and kill G.I. Joe. This is competence of Scar, and it made me happy, even though it didn't work.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And it's a cool right out of the gate thing, because honestly, I'm going to be honest, I zoned out in the first like couple, like while this was happening, because I was just like, oh God, here we go. It's starting with they're starting with another fight, and it's just going to be, oh, they got away. And
there's a lot of pew pew in this.
Yeah. Like, and then, so I was a little bit zoned out. And then once they were like, oh, what a hologram. I was like, what a hologram, you say? You have my attention, sir.
It was weird though, that Tupac would be right there in the dome, but it makes sense why they'd go in there.
I see what you did there, Ray.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was a reference to a thing that happened.
Thank you.
Like 7 years ago.
So, okay. So they decide if we focus our fire, we can shoot out the wall and we can get out. So that's exactly what they do. They
also
concentrate
the
fire
plan,
and they
by
run.
The way.
Yeah. Smart. They're like, we don't have a ton of time. We just got to take this shot, and the shot works, and they get out. And I'm generally happy with the episode completely up to this point.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's nothing bad here. This is all meat. This is all good.
I mean,
I don't know what to do with myself.
Yeah, aside from the story makes sense, and I'm into it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so essentially what happens here is this brings back the plot point from the earlier episode that the Iron Claw is actually alter ego of Count Von Rainey, who is like a nobleman of, I guess, like an Eastern European, kind of a Latverian situation, like Doctor Doom.
And like a very, very powerful man. Which
very
is
well
cool.
connected. Very it's, well
it's,
connected.
It's cool. And well respected, clearly.
Yes.
So it's cool. Again, I find this cool how they differentiate this from Cobra Commander, who's just basically like a leader of a terrorist organization and not well respected. But this is like, all right, what if like Vladimir Putin was secretly a like horrible terrorist?
Well, what do you mean secretly? Okay, so they end up giving info to the Count, because the Count is actually on this like League of Nations that essentially funds and runs G.I. Joe Extreme. Whoa! I think that's a cool plot point. I'm here for it. I think it's a really neat thing. That's why Claw is always one step ahead of G.I. Joe. It's because he literally knows what they're doing all the time.
Wait, they weren't giving that information to count.
Yes.
No, they were giving it to the other character. Because they reference Count Von Rainey in the conversation. They say he's having a party.
Oh, okay. Maybe you're right.
So it's a different character. I was a little unclear on who
that
it was.
That was not clear. But the whole deal is they make it clear that he will get that information, though, because he's part of the team.
Yes, but they, like, the first guy they're having it with, they say, like, you know, your organization has a leak. Count Von Rainey's about to have a big old party. Let's go to this party and see if we can find the leak.
Yeah. Sure. That makes
sense. But that's not Count Von Rainey that they're talking to.
No. That's Stone or something.
Yeah, I forget his name, but it wasn't. It's not.
Okay.
Ray is wrong, is what I'm saying.
No, Mr. Clancy. That's right, because it was
Tom Clancy.
Mr. Belvedere?
Well, what really confused me is the fact that guy was really hard against an investigation. He's like, we cannot risk one. And I'm like, yo, a lot of the things that Claw as the Count does in this episode would, in my mind, draw so much attention to himself.
Yeah.
I'll point them out when we get there.
And here's the thing, like this, like, I'm going to, at the end, say another reason why I like this episode, which I won't right now, because a couple of the things were kind of obvious. But this first thing is I thought it was clever, because I think if it had been a Deke era episode, they would have been talking to Count Von Rainey.
Without question.
And they would have been saying, like, oh my God, Count Von Rainey, you have a leak. And he would have been like, do we? Oh no, like, that's terrible. Well, I'll help you. But instead, the fact that they are telling this third party, hey, there's a leak, let's sneak into Count Von Rainey's party and see if we can figure out who it is, makes it much more interesting, because right off the bat, like, the Count doesn't know at the start of this scheme that they're going to infiltrate his party. He doesn't know. He only knows, like, once someone else tells him. But that, to me, is much more interesting, with more places to go than just them, which I feel like previous iterations may have gone for the simpler, like, what if they tell the guy that really is Claw that they think there's a leak?
Well, not only would they have told Count that there's a leak, Metalhead would have stumbled in and shot two people with his rockets, thus guaranteeing it's all out in the open 2 minutes into this episode. That's how Deke era works.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I like that there's a solid rationale, too. It's like, we can't start investigating because this coalition is fragile. And as soon as we start doing that, then the whole thing will break apart. We're, you know, trying to sue for peace here. And it does feel kind of real, like in the real world, you know, like, I mean, I don't want to get too political, but like, if you were to like start an investigation into like Israel, there would be all sorts of people would be like, no, how dare you? And then all sorts of hell would break loose. All sorts of things would fall apart. So like, Yeah.
That's because global politics sucks.
You can't just start like investigating ambassadors from other countries or the head of the UN without everyone being like, "Oh crap, if this goes wrong, it's gonna be a shit storm. So let's not do it." Yeah. So yeah, again, I appreciated it.
Yeah, 100%. So one of the more interesting action scenes we've seen so far takes place next, because G.I. Joe, three members of the team, are infiltrating, what is it, Stone, Mayday, and is it Dragon? Is he the third one?
Yeah.
No, Ballistic. Ballistic's the third one.
Yeah.
Ballistic, Mayday, and Stone. And they're infiltrating, and they need to, like, come in a car, but it's at the top of this high mountain. So the G.I. Joe answer is to have Metalhead fly a chopper.
Which has
a crane with the car attached to it that he is banging on rocks because it's real, like, windy out. And he finally lands them on the ground near the castle, and they just drive up to the castle. Everything about this is beautiful.
It wasn't even the bit that made me go, wow. That bit was they were talking about how they're going to sneak in.
Yeah.
They obviously need fake papers.
The phony invitations and IDs Metalhead created on his computer.
His what? Computer, you say?
Go on.
Who has a computer? Oh my God. I mean, like, that's such high tech. They probably used Apple Paint to make these documents. Like,
oh yeah,
cutting edge Apple shit. Paint. Am I right?
What are you talking about? It was Windows 95, very clearly.
This was not 95. This was before 95.
I mean,
but this was, I like this bit. again, I think this is clever because you don't realize that they're being carried by a crane in a limo. Like, you just think that they're driving, and they distract you by actual like plot points. Like they're talking about this plan as it looks like they're driving through the mountains, and then all of a sudden like the limo gets bumped, and I had a genuine moment where I was like, oh shit, like they found out, and like, you know, the bad guys are ramming them, and the camera pulls out and it's just like, oh, look at that idiot like flying the helicopter that has us on a bungee that's like, and I was like, what, that's amazing. Like, this was a good sleight of hand bit that you didn't realize what you were even watching until they sprung it on you. Nice little bit of writing.
I liked it.
Honestly, it's the sort of thing that would irritate me, but the way they executed it, like they sort of set it up as opposed to just being like, well, we got to get out there. I don't know how we're going to do it. I've got an idea. And then cut to, you know, this helicopter flying out a limo, which is dumb as hell. But the way they set it up where we're just like, you're like talking, everything's normal. And then,
yeah.
And then you pull back and like, what?
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
Execution of that made that work. And kudos.
Yeah. Into it. So yeah, they get inside the party. So the papers work. And by the way, this show did come out in 1995. So Windows 95 is on the table, Chan.
It takes it 2 years to do the animation for these things.
That's actually true.
But the story takes, but okay. Anyway, my, I just really, hey, Windows 95 was a revelation. Thank you. and so, okay. So they decide they're going to split up when they get to the party. So that's what they do. Stone and Mayday go
also,
one way.
Also, weirdly, like,
yeah.
What's the main dude's name? I remember Ballistic, and I remember
Ballistic, Stone, Mayday. And Mayday.
Not Duke.
Stone, right. Yeah, not Duke. Not Duke gets super close up into his ear, and it's like,
yeah,
we got to split up. It's just like this close-up shot of him just like basically licking his ear. I'm like, what is going on?
That was so weird. It's like what you see in like the Ren and Stimpy show where they like, get real close up on the lips and it's real gross. That's what they did here.
And Not Duke is also like sporting a really like creepy sort of Geraldo mustache and like old 70s glasses, like those sort of wire rimmed square. Again, I'm like getting Geraldo vibes. So when the other dude is like, a woman sort of recognizes him, and the other guy gets like weird vibes. Like he's like, is someone, I feel like maybe I got recognized. And then the other, like Not Duke, leans in directly to his ear to be like, it's okay if you got recognized. I've got a boner in my pants right now and it's just for you. I also was just like, what's happening? But here's what I will say. In other, like, there have been other cartoons and other episodes of G.I. Joe where they are clearly saying things within earshot of other people. So true. I appreciate the fact that they were like, well, shit, he's got to get right up in that ear and whisper it because there are tons of people around. So he's got to just fucking get nose deep in that lobe.
And Gina, just for the record, you don't need to be redundant. When you say Geraldo mustache, creepy is already implied.
Fair point.
Yeah. They all sort of wear disguises. The chick wears a dress and heels, which she complains about later, which I appreciated because that would be a real thing that I would also complain about if I was on a spy mission and forced to wear heels.
Let's talk about that for a sec, because we'll talk about the plot point here. But right after this, Mayday needs to take a seat because her ankles and feet are hurting, which to me means Mayday's leg watch. This is the third episode out of five. She had some sort of problem with her legs. I'm keeping tabs on this, everybody. The fact that she was complaining about ankle pain, I'm counting it for this episode. Three out of five episodes we've seen, Mayday has had some sort of leg injury.
Mayday leg watch. I'm into it.
Mayday leg watch. 1995 / 2011.
Here's the thing. She just 11, had like a fucking broken leg a couple episodes ago. And she's not used to wearing heels. She usually wears whatever her combat thing is. Yep. So yeah, I appreciate the fact because, you know, that's what every time I watch TV, I'm currently sort of watching Arrow in between my Marvel verse,
which I've already between.
Oh my god!
Just I need a palate cleanser. So
as a palate cleanser, I watch this 120 episode program.
Yeah, I mean, I've already watched the first like four seasons of Arrow a bunch of times, but I restarted it because I just thought this will be good. But like some of those women are wearing like uncomfortable heels in those scenes. And I'm just like, come on, man. If you live in a city where there's a vigilante and like people are bursting into places and crime is running rampant, just put on some flats at some point and just be like, yeah, I don't care. So I appreciate the fact that she's complaining about this thing, because it is very unrealistic to see in TV shows when women constantly wear heels and yet never complain about them.
Love it. Love it. So
into it. Girl power, solidarity.
Into it. The plot point here is that there's a photographer taking celebrity photos outside the count's place, and she takes a picture of all the Joes, and she recognizes Ballistic from a time gone by and's like, yo, I know that guy. Okay, I don't know what to do with this information. And that was interesting. I liked it. So go back to Mayday and Stone get attacked, and they get her. They end up having to the big fight happens. I don't remember exactly what happened. I didn't write down.
You skip the part where the journalist goes in and tells Count von Rainey.
Well, that's like the next scene after this one.
Oh,
I don't think so.
It's all at the same time. Whatever. The whole point. Okay, so let's go on with the plot point then. I don't care. So the photographer goes to Count von Rainey and says, yo, I recognize Ballistic. He's a Joe team member. There was a pretty big deal where there was a big mission and two reporters were invited to go alongside the two forces doing the mission. And he left me behind. The other reporter got to go. She got the Pulitzer Prize and I got fired for not getting the story. Now I have to take paparazzi photos and I hate life. You need to know Ballistic's here. Enough about my life.
Yeah, that's, by the way, this is a good grudge. And I appreciate that there's like a shady ass hero in here. Like I appreciate that one of the Joes is like a shade bones guy who fucking hung a reporter out to dry and now she eats ramen every night or something.
First we have Black Dragon shouting not after surrendering. Now we have Ballistic leaving reporters behind. This team is shady.
Because we don't actually get this information until a little bit later. Right now she's just telling Count von Rainey he's here. I did really like that story. Thought it was kind of bullshit that she flipped so quickly.
She's there working for the count. I mean, like, maybe she thinks she's going to get a payday out of this and
can buy the luxury
ramen.
You mean later on when she flips to forgiving him?
Yes.
That was quick. That was quick.
There's a few interesting things about this, about her storyline, which is at first when she recognizes Ballistic, it's Ballistic, right?
Yeah.
And then goes to von Rainey, I was thinking this is a bad guy. That's like, oh shit, like I know your claw. You know what I mean? I thought she was like a claw henchman,
right?
Who was saying, and then it turned out to be much more interesting. It turned out to be like, I know this guy's not supposed to be here and I've got beef with him. So I'm going to rat him out to the host because I know he doesn't belong here. So he's a party crasher. And then von Rainey is just like, oh, it's fine. Everyone's welcome at my party. And she's like a little peeved because she's like, damn it, this motherfucker, I wanted him to get booted. And I will say that I also thought she flipped and forgave him sort of quickly, but I'm willing to forgive it because of the fact that when she's flipping, her life is in danger. So, of course, like, if that were the case, I would also be like, fuck it, man. Like, I forgive you. Just get me out of here. And also, she clearly knows she's also getting great shots. So she's like, all right, just save my life so that I can go get my job back and, like, tell my old bosses to, like, go fuck themselves. I'll forgive it. But yeah, I also liked this storyline. This was a great B story that was going on in the midst of all this.
There was a weird moment because Ballistic, you know, he leaves her behind and she's like, answer for this because this really like ruined my life. And Ballistic turns and he's like, are you the best? And I was like, what the fuck are you talking about, Ballistic? Like, are you the best? Because I'm the best. And if you're the best, then we can both be the best. And she's like, I forgive you. It's real weird. In between all of this, because that's like back-to-back scenes almost, but there's a quick scene in between these where the Claw, he's now transformed the Claw, he has requested evil backup. So he's called some of the evil monster characters, like what their names, Overkill and Wolfman. and Cyborg. I forget all their names, but basically
there's the dude that's like that talks like Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget.
Right. And there's the guy with the big metal hand.
That's the same guy because Dr. Claw also had a big metal hand. And I was like, is this just an extreme version of Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget?
The answer is yes. The answer is yes. So he calls him and he's just like, I need you to come to Count Von Rainey. But they don't know it's him. Castle. Yep. That was kind of cool.
And I do like that. They don't know.
They don't know. So yeah. And this is where he kind of like gives, in my mind, one of the many times he gives up his own game. Because he's like, okay, come to Count Rainey's castle. There's G.I. Joe here. You need to kill him. And they're just like, cool. And then we'll kill everybody else. He's like, well, no, you leave Count Rainey alone. Do not hurt that man. I'm going to tell you right now, do not hurt him.
I think he covers it well by saying, don't hurt any of the other guests, right?
Correct.
Doesn't he basically say, just kill the Joes? Which again, like if I was a henchman, I would be like, all right, yeah. I mean, one is we're taking out one very specific organization. The other starts it all out war with like 30 different nations. So again, I'm willing to forgive this.
Oh, yeah. I don't have any problem with that.
He covers it well, but just looking back on it, it's just like, you know, they're just like, and then we're going to get the count. No, no, you're not. No, hold on. Hold on a sec. It made me laugh when that happened.
This is the sort of thing that we have routinely where in the olden days where, you know, Cobra Commander is like, here's your mission, A. And then some crazy asshole is like, yeah, but I want gold, so I'm going to do B. And it fucks it all up. And if they had just done the mission, then everything would have been fine.
Yep. That happens a lot. Another cool thing, Ballistic
Inferno,
actually loses.
Wreckage and Rampage, by the way. Those are the three.
Not Overkill. Overkill was D-Kara. That's my mistake. Inferno's who I was thinking of. Oh, boy. We got to learn these names, or we don't.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Cobra, you pushed us too far. Now feel the power of the G.I. Joe Thunderclap.
Nobody beats G.I. Joe Thunderclap. Thunderclap is setting a trap. Gonna blow Cobra off the map.
Awesome!
This one's for you, Cobra.
Thunderclap is ready to attack. Gonna blow Cobra off the map.
Kaboom!
Nobody beats G.I. Joe, a real American hero.
Thunderclap comes with drivers.
Nobody beats G.I. Joe. Yo, Joe!
Now back to G.I. Joe.
So
Gina won't. So why should we?
Well, it's our Chan. I hold us to a higher standard when it comes to this stuff than I do Gina. No offense to Gina. I think this is understood on the show at this point.
Look, I asked 5 years ago for a poster with everyone's face on it and name, and it never happened.
No, we got them. We got them.
What are you talking about?
It never got.
We never put them up. No. You know what, Chan? I think it's high time. Take those posters to Gina's house. Let's paper all her walls. G.I. Joe posters.
Done and done.
So a cool thing happens, though, because Ballistic actually is fighting with the reporter they make up. And then he actually gets beat right in front of her. He's about to get killed, but she does the little flash photography to mess up the bad guys. And then he gets them out of it, which I thought was kind of fun. They make up. They're like, cool.
Yeah, I appreciate that she, because earlier he basically said like his excuse for leaving her behind was like, look, when there's a mission, like you got to focus on the fucking mission. You can't just be protecting dames. Now like he does something that clearly requires, maybe it's now or maybe it's later. I forget when it is, but like he does something that like he makes some shot that requires a very precise shot and concentration. Yes. And she's like, oh, right. Okay. Yeah, I get it. You've got to be focused on the fucking mission or else I would have just died.
Yeah. Also, on top of it, she's not useless. She takes what she's got with her, in this case, a photographer, and she uses that skill to help win the battle. Also very fun. You know, she's not just a bump on a log. She's getting involved.
Indeed. Yeah. Before this, Mayday gets captured. That was because I made that note because she shoots the guy and he falls down. I'm like, killed him dead? No, he's up. Yep. That's what my notes say. I also was almost certain that I saw a statue of Iron Claw that she blows up. Like, it was just like in the hallway and she's shooting and a bunch of things get blown up. And that's one of them.
Huh.
Interesting. I didn't go back because I'm very lazy.
No, why would you? Why would you?
And then, she gets knocked out by gas because, you know, knockout gas. Another thing that I feel like we all expected we would have would have more relevance to our day-to-day lives as adults. Turns out not so much.
Now it's just, it only is used by like creepy dentists. That's it.
Yeah.
And around here is where I spotted a little, it's not really an Easter egg, but there's a scene where he's in his Count Von Rainey guise, I believe. And in front of him is a little cobra statue.
Oh, which that's right. Yeah.
I thought was a cool little, at first I was like, oh, this is just a coincidence because there's a mongoose in front of him as well. There's a little mongoose statue and across from it is a cobra statue.
Cool.
But it's just so specific that it feels like someone did that purposely as a nod to Cobra.
Into it.
So we get a plot point here that everything's jammed. So the Joes cannot get a word out because the entire castle's been jammed from signals. So that's okay. So at this point, the robot drop pods come in and a whole bunch of robots invade. And Scar finally makes his appearance. The Count has stepped aside. Scar has stepped forward. And everybody involved is like, let's get them G.I. Joe agents. Let's go get them. And then the next thing I have here is a sound pull. And this is the second time I thought Scar was trying just a little bit too hard to cover his own ass, Chan. I don't have written down what he says.
I'm pretty sure I know what you're talking
about. Yeah, if you could find it.
Excellency, Scar forces are attacking.
Scar forces? Here? How horrible.
Yeah.
That's some good acting.
A little bit much.
Scar forces? Here? I lose it, man. That's great. I'm like, you okay? Good job, Count. Here's your Oscar. You get it.
This is when I started to get worried that they would sort of end this and everyone would have been just fooled by it and it would have gone back to status quo, which is 99.9% of the time what happens at the end of non-serialized shows.
Yep.
It just So I was 100% right now thinking, come on, the dude. Like the Count disappears right when Scar shows up and no one is going to, like, by the end of this episode, they're all just going to say, oh, too bad we couldn't find the leak.
Oh, that's Peter Parker, where did you go? Spider-Man was just here in Europe.
Yeah.
For example. Yeah,
man, what you got against Spider-Man Far From Home?
Like, it's one of my favorite movies. It's wonderful. I have nothing against it. It's just moments like that make me kind of go, oh, okay.
I mean, what's his butt? Original Batman figured it out like immediately in
Michael Keaton. Yeah, he did.
Yeah, he figured it out immediately when his daughter was like, you were barely at the party. And then he was like, oh, shit, you're Spider-Man.
It's a great scene, too. Guys, let's just talk about Spider-Man. No. Okay, so.
I thought you were talking about Adam West.
Who isn't talking about Adam West? He's the best Batman. You're
like, original Batman. I'm like, Adam West? What? Who?
Original
Batman. He wasn't in friggin' Spider-Man. What's going on? Took me a while to figure it out.
Oh yeah, Michael Keaton.
Oh, yeah.
So G.I. Joe has made a point to regroup. They're coming to the castle because they finally figured out what's going on. I enjoyed the moment because Stone, or no, Ballistic, runs out with the reporter, opens the trunk of the car they came in, and there's a whole G.I. Joe vehicle inside there. That was amazing.
Yeah, he comes out in full regalia, which is kind of disappointing because I was like, it was honestly kind of cool to see them, you know, in like different attire, you know,
gotta
fighting.
Sell them figures.
But
gotta
no,
sell them figures.
He's got to be shirtless with bandoliers and all Absolutely. That jazz.
Yeah. And the he's just like, reporter, you got to stay here. And she's like, fuck you, Ballistic, which I couldn't believe made it past standards and practices. But that's
yeah,
what happened.
That's pretty crazy.
She looks right at him square in the eye. And he's like, all right, you're on board. Let's go.
Here was another point where, because he busts out, he's got two pistols, and there's this sort of triangular thing that, you know, is like a sort of lasery pistol thing. I feel like there was a sci-fi show in the 70s that had something similar, because I remember as a kid, because I wasn't allowed to have guns, but I would always try and build something similar to it out of, you know, Legos or whatever we had. There was like this sort of triangular thing. So I know that as an adult looking at that, that particular weapon, I'm like, that is the cheesiest bullshit in the world. You cannot expect me to look at that guy and feel like, oh, well, there's a competent, you know, hero soldier type. That's a dumbass toy. But also, a 9-year-old me would have been like, that is the coolest weapon in the history of weapons.
It kind of reminded me of the original laser tag gun. That's what it sort of reminded me of. I don't know if those were specifically triangular, but that's what that's the vibe I got.
Yeah, that's what a future gun looks like, people.
That's what a future gun of the 90s looks like, at least.
That's what a future gun of the 90s looks like, people.
So, Chan, here's the scene we were talking about earlier. We have a giant fight scene here because G.I. Joe shows up at this point. They break up into the party. The robots are fighting, and they've decided to completely do away with ADR, looping, and other sounds, and only play music. And literally, it's off-putting because there is no sound effects whatsoever for a long-ass fight scene. Can we hear a little bit of this fight scene?
Yes. Wait, did you just say, Chan, this is what we were talking about earlier when I was the one who brought it up earlier?
Don't I do this every episode?
God damn it, Ray. I was specifically the one who said there's a really big 90s moment later when they're doing this thing.
To be fair, I was I was referencing Chan because he's the one who does the sound drops. That's really what I was going for.
Sure.
That's what
I was saying
with
earlier. There's this montage that's kind of like a video. No sound, which is really weird.
I hate you both.
Note that whole action is happening under this.
Yeah, and she's there taking pictures, and for some reason, I was just reminded of like a Whitesnake video. Like, it seems very much that like there would be music, there would be rock and action going on, there'd be like hot women like looking sexy on a car, and there'd be someone taking a picture. So, yeah.
100%.
That's all? No, that's all I had to say about that.
I wanted,
David
I
Coverdale,
wanted more,
what more do you need?
I wanted more than that, Chan. So
you
at this point,
nothing.
At this point, the Iron Claw appears and he's like, get Stone. And this is the third moment where I'm just like, okay, because all his minions and all the evil Scar enemies here, they're all just like, all right, G.I. Joe's here. Let's fuck up this castle. And Claw's like, no, stop. No, we're going to leave the castle alone. And it just keeps happening over and over again. And I'm like, I laugh. I'm loving it every time. Like, here's the deal. It's a bit. It happens in threes and it pays off at the end. Inevitably, I'm very, very happy with everything about this episode. It feels real weird, but I'm super happy with this episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Was there anything more? Weren't you going to expound upon that, man? Tell me about it. Jesus.
So here's the deal. This is the big payoff of the whole episode because the battle's basically over. The Claw Scar people have been routed, and Claw steps back into a cloud of smoke and then comes back out as the Count again. But the photographer lady sees it happen. She's like, yo, there was smoke. There wasn't that much smoke. I absolutely saw what happened here. He turned from Claw into the Count and then stepped back forward again.
Yeah.
And she tells G.I. Joe all about it, furthering the overall plot of this show, not away and Gina.
Yeah, I believe. Yeah. So here's the thing. So she spotted it, and my
Gina,
next.
Expound on this,
please. I've been so conditioned, I guess, by Deke, that when she sees it, I was like, oh, thank God, at least one character knows the truth. And then it cuts to her telling the Joes, I'm nice. Telling you, I know what I saw. So I immediately thought, oh my God, these fuckers aren't going to believe her. And it's just going to be like the next 10 episodes is going to be like, oh, what? He's this? No, we don't believe that. But they're instantly like, well, fuck. If that's the truth, we've got a whole lot like bigger problems on our plate. They don't doubt it. They're just like, oh, well, okay, crap. Like this is even worse than we thought. So I love that. Like, I love that it's totally like they're serializing a cartoon, a kid's cartoon in the 90s at this point, to figure out this guy's secret. They were told by a woman, I know what I saw, and then didn't immediately say, no, you crazy lady. And instead we're like, uh-oh. And then like, that's where they leave it. It's basically like the Joes being told, hey, this huge fucking ambassador, head of the UN, head of Russia, whatever he is also this like this head of a terrorist organization that's like taking shit down. You should look into this. And they're immediately like, we are in over our heads and we're doomed. And I was like, damn, that's a good note to leave it on, man. Yep. I loved it.
Yeah.
That's it. I'm done.
Chan, anything you want to add to that?
No, Gina should be the one adding things here. I don't know why I'm the one that's being...
No, it's now become a bit for me to just keep throwing it to Chan, who has literally nothing to say. It's now my new favorite bit for this show. We're talking about adding in new games and bits, everybody. We talked about it in the weeks between the last G.I. Joe and this one, and this is what we got. We got throw it to Chan, who does nothing. We have most 90s moment, and we still have the continued bit. Gina says something, but Ray thinks Chan said it. So all the hits are here, everybody. And Gina sung. And Gina sings. That's always a every episode deal.
How dare you? I have a gorgeous voice.
So moving forward, we have the PSA at the end here, which was we're five episodes in. They're already reusing PSAs. That's troublesome, right? That is a little worrisome.
Yeah, it's so weird. Like the only thing I can think is that they had another one lined up and it wasn't ready in time. Or like alternatively, is it possible that this was not the original PSA and that it just like got uploaded to this shady site we use to watch cartoons because it's just so weird in five episodes to repeat one.
It is, but it could also be they only might have made like six because it was only going to air over like 13 episodes of season one. So the idea being they'll just rotate them through and who gives a crap, you know?
Yeah, they might have even have sent them separately, sent the PSA separate from the episode. And the station, the TV station would then have to assemble the thing and they may have only given them X number of PSAs and they just had to like slap it on to the end of whatever episode, you know?
Yeah. But we'll see if the trend continues. Maybe they only made four of them for all we know. I mean, whatever. It doesn't change my life really at all either way, but it is the one where the kid's at home alone. And then the shady guy calls and says, you want a prize? And he says, oh, that guy was looking for was trouble. Which, you know, I really appreciated that too. Yes. It's a good PSA, a good lesson for kids. Just say a mom and dad can't come to the phone.
Mm-hmm. Which then became how you knew that that they were home alone.
Correct. No, that's why you say like, oh, you know, like my mom can't come to the phone. She just shot a raccoon and she's skinning it and dad is cleaning the gun. Do you want me to take a message? And then they think you're a crazy hick family and they leave you alone.
Like, yeah, mom's underneath the bed. She don't have any arms or legs. my brother is fucking her right now.
You gotta repopulate the family. So
yeah, you know, to fight the war of northern aggression.
I feel like I probably brought this up in original Sunbow when they did this exact same thing. But like, what child here's the thing, in the 90s when there were no cell phones and kids
in
weren't tech savvy or anything, and you just had a landline and probably an answering machine. Like, what kid is home alone answering a phone? You know,
Are you kidding me?
Like a kid that young being left home alone is crazy. But also then,
Not in the 90s.
I was also alive in the 90s, Ray. None of my friends were left home alone.
Here's the thing. I was a latchkey kid in the 80s. So I can tell you, if you don't have an answering machine, you have to pick up the phone because it might be your mom calling for, you know, like, I'm going to be late or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, if you have no way of screening, then you have to answer every time.
But also in my house, we only had one landline and I wasn't like allowed to answer the phone. It had to be one of the parents because I would screw it up. So if I'm the only one home and the phone rings, it's like, this is my time to shine. I get to answer the phone. I get to be a big kid. I'm answering the phone. I 100% would have answered the phone under those circumstances. And I probably would have been home alone too.
Would you have gotten into trouble?
But you were a latchkey kid because you weren't left home alone. Latchkey is the opposite of being left home alone.
Wait, Gina, do you know what a latchkey kid is?
Yeah.
How
would you define a latchkey kid? I'm very curious.
It's like an after school, a kid who has to stay after school because their parents can't pick them up at a certain time, they have to
wait for their butler to pick them up. That's what Gina knows about latchkey kids.
To take their helicopter home. Because Gina
is the queen of Boonton Township.
That's correct.
I get that the original term meant like you arrive home to an empty house. So you are a latch and key kid. But then schools started an after school thing for latchkey kids so that they wouldn't have to go home.
That is correct. They created latchkey
programs. That became the new latchkey kid. The new latchkey kid was kids who
that became an after school program named after the kids who just went home and had to bring a key with them to school because they were home alone and could answer the phone when bad strangers were calling them.
Boy, that would have been nice.
I need this PSA.
Would have loved to have an after school program.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ. You know, fucking silver spoon in my mouth, too. That would have been great.
You know what the after-school program was when me and Chan were growing up, Gina? A gang. That was the after-school program.
I was going to say getting beat up by a gang, so yeah.
Ray is lumping himself in with Chan and in actuality was not a latchkey kid.
I was 100% a latchkey kid. I would come home, I would let myself in the house, and I would perform concerts to record albums on my living room table with a pretend microphone, and I would do this most days.
Oh, I'm looking up latchkey kid on
oh on boy. Wikipedia. Turn on the safe search. I'm sure there's some porn site that's hot latchkey kids.
There's a whole section on the effects it had on children. Loneliness, boredom, and fear are most common for those younger than 10 years of age.
Most latchkey kids grew up to become podcast hosts.
most, I would argue all.
In the early teens, there is a greater susceptibility to peer pressure, potentially resulting in such behavior as alcohol abuse, drug abuse, sexual promiscuity, and smoking.
Dang.
So what happened to me then?
What the fuck? That's rude.
I wasn't doing any of those things.
Higher rates of depression and lower levels of self-esteem.
Well, there we go. Nailed it.
Okay, go on. No, I can't relate.
Well, then we just figured out why I'm better than both of you.
If that was your one piece of criteria, I don't know what you've been paying attention to all the time up to now.
Yeah. You know how I said I used to get beat up by gangs? I'm pretty sure Gina was one of those people.
Well, you shouldn't have answered the phone and told you were home alone, Chad. Didn't you watch G.I. Joe? Problem.
That is my fault. Here's the thing. My mom wouldn't let me watch G.I. Joe as a kid, so I didn't know, and that's how I died.
I also did not watch G.I. Joe as a kid because my parents didn't like the gun stuff, but I did watch a lot of He-Man.
I also did watch a lot of G.I. Joe as a kid because my parents didn't care.
That's why you fucking love guns right now, you right-wing nut.
Look, and that's why Gina got into steroids. Heavily.
Every single one of these things is true.
Why I sleep with a sword under my bed.
You can take my sword when you're proud from a cold, dead skeleton hand.
And here's the deal, Chan. Let me ask this question. 50-50, Gina may actually sleep with a sword under her bed. I'm not sure if that was a lie or not, or a bit.
Nope. No, I
think there's a very
tell.
Legitimate chance she sleeps with a sword under the bed.
Here's what I will say. Before I moved, That is where I kept my ninja sword.
Uh-huh.
But then when I moved, I gave it away. Or did I? Where is my ninja sword?
It's under your bed, Gina. I'm going to promise you that right now.
Now I have a bashing baton so that if I wake up in the middle of the night and I hear a noise, I can just reach over Gina. And get my bashing baton and bash someone's head in.
Look, if I break into Gina Ippolito's house and Gina comes rushing out with a little baton, I'm going to be like, there is no threat here. If Gina comes out like carrying a samurai sword, I'm going to run from that house. So let me tell you right now, Gina, get your goddamn sword back.
I can't. I don't. I here, genuinely am not sure where it is right
this
now.
This is no.
That's
no.
A problem.
No. She problem. Knows where that sword is.
Yeah, she does.
She is trying to lure people into her house.
Oh,
so
no.
That she can like beat them up, lock them up and do like the end of Pulp Fiction.
To be fair, when Gina moved from her very small apartment to her glamorous new house, she was not able to bring all the sex dungeon 22 to 24 year old improv kids with her. She needs a restock.
Yeah.
She needs the sword.
Yeah, that's true. I have a long sword and a short sword, a pair of sai and a pair of nunchucks. Fuck. And I hope I didn't get rid of all of them.
Hashtag Gina sleeps with a sai under her pillow or hashtag Gina calls her vagina Castle Grayskull. Just hit us up with those hashtags, one or
both
the
work.
Other, on
both
Twitter,
work.
And let us know what
honestly,
you think.
Honestly, I'm
is
happy with either one of those hashtags.
Yeah, they're right. Both pretty good.
I win. I win in both scenarios.
And that's our show, everybody. G.I. Joe Extreme, episode 5, To Catch a Claw. Guys, this is a real fun one. This may have been the best episode. Dare I say it? The best episode of G.I. Joe Extreme we've seen thus far. And I'm here for it. Final thoughts on this episode from y'all.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, does it... I had this conversation a couple days ago, and I was showing my kid some new show that's going to be on Netflix or something like that. And it was fine. It was what it was. It was a kid's cartoon. And what I was saying was that I have touched the face of God. I have seen a children's cartoon show that I enjoy watching. And so anytime now I see something that's just fine, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. It's perfectly okay. I'm like, but it could have been Bluey. So when I'm watching this show, I'm like, yeah, this is fine. Like all of the pieces there, and it's not that bad. It's perfectly okay. But still in the back of my head, I'm like, but it's not Bluey.
I was reading an article last night. I should have forwarded it to you guys, but it was about kids' cartoons. Well, it was basically talking about how important for kids to not grow up as sort of anxious, depressed people to have
latchkey programs after school.
Yeah. To have a very like rigid structure, like in terms of a routine of, you know, they wake up at the same time, they go to bed at the same time, like a lot of this stuff. And they were basically talking about how in kids' cartoons, adults, especially around the age of like 3, 4, 5, it's really important for kids to have this routine that they're used to. It helps them sort of not feel, it helps them feel safe and develop like healthy attachments. And it was talking about how cartoons play a part in that, because what we consider boring as the same format over and over of like the character, even like characters wearing the same outfit in everything. Like for instance, Dora is wearing the same outfit in every episode. She's not changing her clothes. Is it all does something to kids' brains to make them sort of comfortable functioning children. And it was saying like, this is why adults are like, you know, we'll watch those cartoons for younger kids and be like, oh my God, it's like so boring. Curious George always like gets in trouble and always the man in the yellow hat like finds him, blah, 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 blah. But it's ideal for kids, and it's actually like, you know, the alternative is not good for them. So I found that very interesting.
Yeah, that's the whole theory behind the Mr. Rogers show and how it was cyclical. Yes. And it began and ended the same way every single time.
Yes, and kids felt comforted by the routine, and that's what they're used to, and that's why, you know, unfortunately, like kids who come from chaotic households then have a lot of issues versus like kids who have sort of that structure of things happen at the same time and we do the same things and we watch the same thing and this program happens, like, you know, the same thing happens in this program, but kids don't find it boring. We as adults find it boring, but kids find it great and comforting. So now
what
I've been
hearing,
looking at cartoons differently,
is that because my mother didn't let me watch G.I. Joe, all of this therapy I can charge to her. It's her fault.
Correct. In a really weird roundabout way, Chan, if your mom had let you watch G.I. Joe, you probably wouldn't have been broken enough of a person to do a G.I. Joe podcast for 6 years.
Oh, this is some like Loki level bullshit. Like there's an alternate universe. There's a variant me who is like well adjusted and has good self esteem.
Wait,
and is also really into guns. So that's
former military.
Instead of G.I. Joe, unless it was like a David Lynch film, I think you're fine with watching the Smurfs and the Gummy Bears.
Problem was, it probably was a David Lynch film. Unfortunately,
here's the thing. By the time I got to an age where I could watch David Lynch films, I was like, this guy gets me. Literally, like when I feel here's a weird thing about me. I feel comforted watching David Lynch films. I'm like, that's feels something. Normal. This feels like I like how he perceives the universe is how I perceive the universe.
Well, you should have watched more Smurfs.
I should have. That's
and
really
on that note, we're gonna get out of town. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. Let's see here. We've got some social media stuff to talk about. You can go to facebook.com/knowingisheftthepodcast and meet us there. You can meet us on Twitter at G.I. Joe Podcast. Tweet at us individually, which we'll tell you in a sec, but also the name of the show, and you make the Hall of Fame of Twitter people. A second member, Justin, I believe, has now joined the Twitter Hall of Fame with Channing Sherman as somebody who knows how to appropriately tweet us all and get our attention. Great job, Justin. You can also hit us up patreon.com/knowingisheftthepodcast. We are going to be doing some Find Your Fate books. So once I get a little bit of craziness sorted out this summer, we are going to pick like a weekend day before too very long. And we're going to do a Find Your Fate book with the community of Patreon of Knowing Is Half the Podcast. So get ready for that. Get ready to come join us. I felt that the theme song Throwdown Losers Bracket episode was one of the most successful ventures that we've done. And I want more of that. So let's bring the people on board and we'll do special Finder. Guys, I said before I've been buying a bunch of Find Your Fate books. I bought even more.
And he can't write it off unless we do these friggin' episodes. So
I need to really do these episodes because they start getting expensive if you've looked for them. There's a handful that are cheap. And then there's the multitude that are not, and I'm starting to run out of cheap ones. So I'm going to have to start dropping some cash. Thank you for the Patreon.
don't forget, we also had Sir Moxford A. Libitsky Esquire, who also joins the Hallowed Hall of Fame.
Oh, okay, great.
Oh, yeah.
People are starting to get it. People actually listen to the show, which is hard for me to believe.
I know. Hey, Chen, did you know that if you can go on Facebook or you can go on Apple Podcasts right now and give us a 5-star review. We will read it on the air if you want to go do it. You know, it turns out that we have a 4.9 overall rating.
Nice.
And the primary reason for that is because we have a single solitary 1-star review weighing down the litany of almost entirely 5-star reviews that we have.
A true iconoclast.
From an overall 5 to a 4.9. Oh. Chen, what kind of monster would give this show a 1-star review, and why would he also be on the show?
Someone with who understands the purity of podcasting and knows that honestly, it was just a dick move, and I'm still real proud of it. I feel good.
You know, Chen, you can go back and change your review at any time.
Wait, did I ever
do a
review? Change your review? I feel like
No, of course you didn't, Gina.
Which is worse? Which is worse here? Also, I feel like this is exactly what happened to Paddington 2. It had a perfect Rotten Tomato score, and then some Chan went in and messed it up.
Yeah, that's now the official term for someone who ruins a review set. You know, I get a bonus if I get all, you know, perfect scores, but then I had one Chan out there who hit me, and now I don't get my bonus.
Look, here's the thing. If you hire me to do movie reviews. And I got an actual CV. You could hire me legitimately for some online.
Oh, you have a CV?
I
would hire you to do some writing if you had a CV.
I will.
Inside as a joke's going to get, folks.
I will go to Rotten Tomatoes and put one bad review up for every 100% movie. I will do that, not because I have to, but because I need to. In my heart, it's a thing that I must do.
Some
people feels so good.
Just want to watch the world burn. Robert Clark Chan. Anyway, you can hit us up there on patreon.com/knowingusafthepodcast. $5 a month. Super Secret Vault. I think we figured out it was 423 episodes of this show, which is outrageous.
Too many. But it is.
That's how many are in the vault right now, and more coming. I just updated all of season 5 is now also in the vault, along with the special Patreon only Manchi Cheese episode. So if you like what we're doing here, maybe you're newish to the show and you would like to listen to a lot more of it, there's a lot of it in that vault, and it's very easy to access. Thank you to our patrons, and I'd love to see more of you. Let's make this happen. Otherwise, you can hit us up on Twitter, as I said before, at G.I. Joe Podcast. But individually, I am at Almighty Ray.
At 999 RPMs.
I'm at Gina Ippy.
And that is our show. We'll be back next week to wrap up the Orbtacular Wing Commander, everybody. Part 4 of 4 of the Orb Commander series. I'm ready. Let's do this. Are you guys ready?
I'm ready for the Wing Command Orb episode.
I'm ready to see how it ends. Life.
Orb
life.
Ends.
Not the orbtacular or orbular. Just life in general and the world.
And when it ends, you know, they say when God closes a door, he orbins a window.
Oh.
I
would have gone with this is how the world ends, not with a bang, but with an orb.
With a wimp orb. Come on.
With a wimp orb. It was right there, Gina.
Ugh.
No.
Now I'm extra mad. Wow.
Situation critical.
Roll call.
Ballistic. Harpoon.
Mayday.
Black Dragon.
Right, Lieutenant Stone.
The odds are 1,000,000 to 1.
And that's the way we like it.
Hello, dear listeners. Do you enjoy playing video games with your best friends? Then I have the pod for you. I'm Philip, host of the Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. Each week, my co-host Nave and I break down a cooperative experience in gaming. And we are always looking for new co-op partners to join us. So come play with us on the Gaming Together podcast.
So I'm standing over this toilet taking a piss, and I'm playing my Pokemon, and I dropped it in the toilet. I remember the Game Boy just tumbling into water. And I remember screaming for my mom, trying to get this Game Boy.
Wait, how old are you?
And she yelled at me.
Oh my god.
Like, traumatized. I was like, no, my Pokemon.
That's Gaming Together, a cooperative podcast. Come on down, co-op partners.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.